Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
I'm from the dirty, but that Chico nice. Y'all call it a moment, I call it life.
One day while the light is glowing, I'll be in my castle golden. But until the gates are open, I just wanna feel this moment. Whoa, I just wanna feel this moment. Whoa, just wanna feel this moment.
Miss Worldwide, Christina Aguilera. Oye, mamita, dale que la cosa está rica.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 528. Oh my lord, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like I got married already. I feel I have been in a day of celebration, and I haven't even gotten to the Gay Pride Parade yet. I don't even know in what world I'm living. We had an amazing Windy City Gay Idol last night, and we'll be telling you more about that, and we'll have the amazing, ferocious powerhouse Maria Paul on the show. We've got a Lady Gay Idol in 2013, and man, does she represent. It got real, real up in main stage last night as over 350 people. We're packing the joint and we were celebrating. And why? Because we had something to celebrate. Earlier that day, we always have something to celebrate because we're queer. But earlier that day, we really had something to celebrate. Many people came up to me at Gay Idol and said, I was so excited to be here, especially with all of my people on this very day. Many of you were probably glued to your television sets Wednesday morning or on your computer screens when the Supreme Court finally announced their decision on two historic rulings 90 days after the hearings on Prop 8 and DOMA. And history has been changed, folks. DOMA was struck down. Same-sex marriage will be restored in the state of California. And so I immediately picked up the phone in the midst of putting on fake eyelashes to dash out the door to put on a gown to host Gay Idol and said, Jim Bennett, my friend, would you please come on and talk with me about what this means for us and just give us the backstory and how we move forward. Jim is the Midwest Regional Director of Lambda Legal. He's been on the front lines of this fight for marriage equality for years now. And we talked with him just 2 months ago about the highly anticipated vote in Illinois that I know many were disappointed about. We have not spoken to him since then, but I am thrilled to have him on the show again today to talk about where we are right now. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, my gosh, I'm good. A little tired as well, yeah. but great.
Yeah, it's been a week. On top of that, you throw in the fact that for many Chicagoans, the Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup, it's like a luxury of riches that we've had this week.
I know. I don't really follow hockey, but, you know, once they get to the playoffs and the parties begin, I jump into that as well.
I have to say, I was, like, praying on Monday night that they would win because I didn't want anything to get in the way of Gay Idol finals because that would have been the seventh game. And I'd never watched a hockey game in my life, so, like, three of my friends were texting me saying, they're up, they're down, they're up, they're down, we won! And I was like, great, that's all I need to know, I can go to bed. But it was elevated even higher to have Windy City Gay Idol finals on Wednesday night. Let's just do some basics. Jim, tell our listeners, what is DOMA? What is the history of it? When was it established, and what did it do to us as GLBT people in the U.S.?
Oh, it really screwed us over. And there's two parts of it. So part of it's still in place, which is you know, the next step. But DOMA barred the federal government from recognizing the marriages of same-sex couples, and that's what was struck down. So what that meant was you could be legally married, for example, in Iowa or soon Minnesota here in the Midwest, and the federal government was not providing the benefits that come with marriage to those couples. So, you know, things like health care or your pension, Social Security, the estate tax, all those kind of things. None of that, we didn't get any of that. And so that's what has changed. And mm-hmm. so states that have marriage equality, they'll have the full set of federal benefits. The other piece that is not, that remains in place is there's a provision that makes it so that if you're married in Iowa, if you were straight, that the recognition would be in every other state. Mm-hmm. It's reciprocal. Mm-hmm. And that we have not undone yet. So right now you still have this sort of a state by state where you could be legally married in Iowa. It would be downgraded in Illinois to a civil union, and then you could go to Indiana and have nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's the other piece.
So they needed, it always is helpful to have real people, real faces attached to any legislation going, especially to any trial, but especially to the Supreme Court. Edie Windsor, who is she and what did she mean to this hearing?
Edie Windsor, there were several cases that were going to the Supreme Court at once, all that could have gotten to the same point, but by far, I think that was the case that all of us found the most compelling. So Edie Windsor was a woman in New York. She had been married, I believe, in Canada and was recognized in New York, so she was legally married there. Her partner of decades had died, and she was handed a bill from the state of New York for hundreds of thousands of dollars. That if she would have been married to a man, she would have had the grieving process, but there would not have been a bill attached to it for half of her entire estate.
Right.
And so the ACLU took that case all the way to the Supreme Court, and Edie Windsor won yesterday. And I believe at Pride will all be wearing "I am Edie Windsor" buttons and stickers that we'll be passing out. So we're pretty excited.
Oh, that's so cool. And we should say, you know, she is an older woman. There's a documentary about her story. It's a beautiful love story. But, I mean, there are not many heterosexual marriages. They are rare that have stood the test of time. It really tells their story, and it so humanizes it. It was going to be really hard for the Supreme Court to look at this sweet older woman and and not be touched and not see the humanity in our legislation.
Exactly. I mean, I think you look at this issue so many times as a political issue, but when it comes down to really what it is, it's our families and our lives, and that's not political at all.
Right.
So I think I certainly think that was compelling for this court.
What was the exact Supreme Court decision on DOMA? I mean, not exact. You don't have to give the exact words, but what does it state, Jim?
Mainly that you cannot treat couples differently just based on who they love. You cannot have this separate classification of couples that somehow are treated less and with less dignity, with less rights, with less responsibilities, that there has to be equality consistent throughout the state. And of course, the challenge is going to be you find that ruling then applies to all the states that have marriage, and yet we see in all the other states, you know, like we're looking at 13 states now, so you have another 37 that don't have those protections, or we have civil unions or sort of marriage lights in a few of those states. And we're going to continue to push at the courts and the legislatures until it's corrected. And the interesting thing, I think, for us sort of at Lambda is that the number of legal questions and lawsuits that this opens is just going to be exponential. Because if you look at, I guess moving on then to Prop 8, You know, so the way the Prop 8 was struck down was, you know, they took sort of a technicality in saying basically that the other side that was in opposition to us did not have standing, that they, it was not appropriate for them to represent the other side of this issue. And so it allows marriages to continue in California, but it didn't open it up to all the states, which, you know, if the court wanted to go big, they could have said, you know, it's illegal. It's unconstitutional to discriminate anywhere, and then we would have had it in all 50 states. So it's going to be sort of fascinating because one of the things that we're working on now at Lambda, and there's 12 other national gay groups that put up a really great website for all of these issues. I'll give that to you before we finish. But they, for example, a lot of these rules are administrative, and they're different on how they're recognized. So for immigration, for example, you know, we have a lot of binational couples where someone is married to someone from another country. And up until yesterday, that person from the other country had no recognition. They, you know, they were considered an undocumented immigrant and were not able to, you know, join sort of the fabric of our country. But in that particular law, the government recognizes, the federal government recognizes where the wedding took place, not where you live. So we believe now that a couple that's binational, they can go to any state or country that has marriage equality, and it doesn't matter where they live in the United States because the law recognizes where the marriage is celebrated, not where they reside.
Wow, so that's a huge difference now for immigration. Which
is
a hot topic right now, outside of the GLBT community even.
Correct. And so you look at things like in Illinois, you know, we have civil unions in Illinois, but if you're a binational couple, you need to go to another state, get married, like Iowa, Minnesota, go there, get married, and come back, and then you're protected, and your partner, husband, or wife can get a green card and move forward. And so there's going to be a lot of these sort of these middle ground or issues, and we're just beginning. You know, the first thing is really to see where the Obama administration ends up, what they can do administratively, and they've made it very clear in their statement yesterday that they're going to aggressively push to, you know, get the LGBT community as many rights as they can, you know, within this ruling, and we're certainly going to push them to do the same, and then. And then groups like ours, ACLU, the NCLR, the Lesbian Rights Group, and many others, we're gonna start bringing litigation across the country until we have 50 states.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I mean, you mentioned Prop 8. Now, just to go back to that story a little bit, you know, it was marriage was legal for a very short period of time in the state of California. How did they achieve their marriage equality? I can't remember right now. Through the courts, or
it was a Lambda Legal, ACLU, and the NCLR all did a case together in California, and I think that case was decided in 2008, and then we had.
Mm-hmm. It was decided in their Supreme Court, right? In the California Supreme Court? Okay. So that was one of the controversial from more conservatives, social conservatives, said, you know, that this liberal court decided something for the state, right? That was kind of the leg they stood on, correct?
Correct. And in California, I mean, you know, they're a weird state for a million reasons, but they have a very easy process to put things on the ballot. And so that's why you always have, you know, if you remember, they had a ballot initiative to take out their governor, and that's what brought Arnold Schwarzenegger in. And they have all these ballot initiatives. And so Prop 8 was a ballot initiative where they went around, collected signatures, and got enough signatures to take marriage away. And I think that's the first time in our country where we saw rights granted and then rescinded.
Mm.
And, you know, I always think back, in 2008, I mean, you know, for us here in Illinois, where it was like, oh my God, we're celebrating, you know, the President Obama ring Grant
right.
Park, and then you have this sort of like gut punch, you know,
yep.
for our community. And it was wild to see those, it was joining the impact that was setting up those rallies everywhere. And I think for people that, especially, you know, I was in my 40s, that you sort of thought, well, young people are never going to care because they're not thinking about marriage, gay or straight, anyway. But that was not the case. People really rose up and went after it. And the decision that the what the court upheld, because they have upheld the previous court's decision, was that a majority of voters do not have the right to strip a minority of its rights without a good reason, and there's no good reason to take away people's rights. And you know, I think one of the things that I keep thinking about, of all those haters out there that have just always gone after us, and we all know who they are, you know, whether it's from, you know, that American Family Institute or, you know, these crazy conservative causes, that they lost nothing yesterday. You know, there's nothing happens to their marriage, nothing happens to their lives. Their worlds go on exactly as they were before. What was gained are for our families. And so it's not a zero-sum game. We didn't take something away from one side to give it to our side. More people won yesterday than ever before. So they can feel happy as well.
It's enough sunshine for everybody is what I always
say.
It's not like if we're all standing under the sun that we don't all get a piece of it.
Agreed.
So the Supreme Court decision yesterday on Prop 8 said what? And what is that? How does that impact California moving forward?
It was a very narrow decision. So they really ruled on a technicality. When that case began, and if you remember, it was Olson and Boies, the two attorneys that had did the Bush v. Gore debate. You know, they were pushing for an issue that there's a constitutional right to be married across the country. And what they really had hoped when they began that case was that you could get a Supreme Court ruling that would give it to all 50 states. And I think if it got closer to the U.S. Supreme Court, there were certainly groups that felt like this is not the court we want to be making that decision for a variety of reasons. And there was a lot of fear that they could actually set us back. And in fact, it's interesting because the court could have decided not to even take the case and it would have had the same result. But what they did is they took it and then made a decision that the people representing the opposition against us, that it was inappropriate for them, that they did not have standing, that there was no compelling reason why they should be taking us on, because they had nothing to lose. They had no skin in the game. So all it did is allow the previous court's ruling to stand and allow marriages to continue. But it doesn't, at least on the, we don't believe, it doesn't seem to have any effect anywhere else beyond California. And I'm not sure exactly when marriages will start in California. The governor definitely wanted to move forward, but it seemed like there was going to be a delay, but probably not more than a month or so. Their attorney general has asked for it to immediately begin. And so, you know, but I think within the next, my guess is no longer than a month, we'll start seeing marriages in California again. But that will certainly be the case, that the marriages will begin again in California very soon.
So you mentioned the narrow vote with Prop 8. With the Supreme Court and the judges, what were the stories there yesterday about this bench? Who really came through for us? Or was it, I mean, because obviously I think as much as could have happened in our favor, happened in our favor, right? So how did that happen?
I mean, on the DOMA one, it was exactly as expected. It was a traditional sort of split, with the liberals with us and the conservatives against us, and Kennedy, the deciding vote, siding with DOMA or to crush DOMA. And interestingly, he had really tipped his hat in those arguments, so that there was a pretty strong level of confidence in our community. Certainly Rachel Maddow thought so.
Yes.
That would be struck down, because there was a comment he had made in the oral arguments where he said, what about the 40,000 real children of same-sex parents in California that are calling out for equality? Because, you know, the other side will talk about their theories of protecting children, but it's theoretical. you know we have real children that are being discriminated against in schools because their parents can't get married, or you know, parents aren't able to get to the hospital because of confusion on what the status of the relationship is. And so there was, you know, he made a clear signal both then and in his decision that they were going to move forward on taking DOMA down. And so that's how that one divided. And mm-hmm. the opposition was, you know, was as expected.
Yeah.
On DOMA, it was sort of a weird mix because you had some people, you know, ultimately, you know, you had five justices that were saying there was not standing. Mm-hmm. And so you had a mix of conservative and liberal judges that were combined. One, because I think some of the liberal judges felt like the country wasn't ready. The country wasn't ready for a 50-state solution. And I think you had hints of that even from Justice Ginsburg, that there was sort of a fear that this could be, there sometimes is a comparison to Roe v. Wade, the reproductive rights case, where there's a belief among some that the country would have ultimately decided this by public opinion, and the court doesn't like to get too far ahead of public opinion. Mm-hmm. And by them ruling too quickly on Roe v. Wade, it sort of left this festering debate that just never ends in our mm-hmm. in our nation. Mm-hmm. And so there were some of the conservatives, there were some justices that said they didn't have standing because I don't think they were ready to move. And then there's also justices that realized if this did move forward, you know, because the belief was that the conservative justices wanted to bring this case, hoping that they could set us back. And so the thinking is those justices may have felt like we're not going to win this, so the best we can do is minimize it. Mm-hmm. Minimize sort of the victory as much as possible and just have it affect California. So, you know, that one was a little bit more unusual. And I think their reasons were different as to yeah. how they made that decision. Yeah. But, you know, the ultimate gain is you now have with California, I mean, it's our biggest state. So you have 30% of LGBT couples or LGBT people in general that are now in states where they can get married and have mm-hmm. all these rights. Mm-hmm. And when you think back 10 years ago, there wasn't any.
Right.
So it's just absolutely phenomenal.
Well, momentum is high. The tide is turning. And you've mentioned earlier now the state-to-state work that will need to be done. I hear that there is a march on Springfield. Can you tell me some about that and what work will be done here in Illinois? Because this obviously provides momentum for our state and maybe the disappointment or suspension that people are feeling with the House vote or lack of vote in Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, that was really crappy. I mean, to not take
yeah,
that
we have
vote.
Not talked and, to you but since then, so I do want your feelings on that.
Yeah, it was just absolutely horrible. And that certainly made yesterday a little bittersweet because if that had been done, we would be seeing this very weekend our gay and lesbian couples getting married and getting all of their benefits. And that's not going to be the case, you know, for probably another year now. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know why that vote wasn't taken or why it didn't pass. But I think going forward, what we'll be doing is one, there's, you know, the coalition that we had in place is adding many additional partners. We're opening our office in the Urban League, at the end of, in the middle of July, July 15th, and expanding our field staff so that we're making sure that some of these representatives that said that they needed to meet gay and lesbian couples in their districts, apparently they just don't believe we're everywhere. Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure they meet us and we're going to be there. And then the March on Springfield is actually the brainchild of Tracy Bain, who I think we all know. And mm-hmm. and I always, you know, the one thing about that Tracy Bain is when she decides she's going to do something, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so whether it's the gay games or a Christmas movie or a radio show or yep. a book, you know, I would not bet against her. So, you know, we're headed down to Springfield on, I believe it's Tuesday, October 22nd. And it is going to be a quite a display of political capital and force of our community and our allies, gay or straight, in Springfield. And one, I think it's going to be a fabulous party because that's what we do, you know.
Yes.
And we have joy in the fight, you know. And so and so I think it's going to be a blast to go down there. But I'm also certain we're going to send a message that this is a community that isn't taken for granted, and that or that they better not take us for granted, and that they need to take our issues seriously, because you know, those politicians are sure there when they want to pay a check for their campaigns from us. Mm-hmm. And it's time that they step up and make sure equality happens in this state. And so that will be what we'll be working towards, you know, beginning on June 1, you know, last June 1, until this passes.
Yeah. And so that will happen in October, and that timing is important because hopefully that will
it's the beginning of the veto session. So October 22nd is the first of 6 days of the veto session. And we don't know exactly when they'll be calling the bill. But so our sense is we're not going to work around that date. We went in the very first day when they get back to Springfield to realize that, you know, that we're not sitting on our hands, you know, yeah. that we're going to be down there. And then also Lambda Legal and ACLU have a case, which is a lawsuit against the state of Illinois called Darby v. Orr, named after Jim Darby, who, mm-hmm. you know, many of us know. He's an 81-year-old Korean War veteran. Him and his partner will have been together 50 years this July. And that case is moving into its second phase. So, you know, one way or the other, we're going to have marriage in Illinois, but that legislature owe it to Illinoisans and all Illinoisans to bring Illinois into the light. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what we'll be working toward.
Wow. Well, it's a lot of exciting work to be done. I love that you said we're always going to have a party when we do it. And so we appreciate you being on the front lines and the people at Lambda Legal and many of the organizations. How can we as individuals help, Jim? How do we get connected and be a part of the momentum?
Go on IllinoisUnites.com or .org. I think both work. And you can sign up to volunteer if anyone's going to be at any of the parades coming up, beginning with Dyke March on Saturday through all of our events in August. Every one of our groups will be handing out cards with a text number on them, and Organizing for America, the group that spun off after the Obama campaign, has provided their amazing technology to us. And so we'll be signing people up and getting them out in the districts, and then working on this march. And if you go on Facebook and just type in March, I think it's March on Springfield, that'll come up, and you can sign up for that as well. But both sort of portals will get you the information you need to move forward.
Well, I know Tracy had little purple March on Washington cards all over main stage last night. So we so appreciate
They've shown up
you.
In my office today.
I bet they did. She's going to make it happen. It's going to be big.
Yeah, she sure is.
It's going to be a million gay march on Springfield. Jim Bennett, thank you so much. Happy Pride to you, my friend. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks. I look forward to seeing you.
I look forward to seeing you as well. And everybody, have a wonderful gay pride. This show is not done. This is a big fat show for promoting we're celebrating still after Gay Idol, celebrating the Supreme Court and getting some information on that, and also looking ahead to 4th of July. It's just right around the corner. The Jill and Julia show, Jill Sobule and Julia Sweeney. Jill Sobule of the original I Kissed a Girl song back from the 90s before Katy Perry did it, and Julia Sweeney from SNL fame have a show at the City Winery, and I've got Jill Sobule on the show as well. Coming up after the news with me and Kirk and what's going on in the theater.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
Within hours of the U.S. Supreme Court striking down the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, in the landmark U.S. versus Windsor case, the ACLU announced a nationwide campaign to bring Republicans into its efforts to strike down barriers to the freedom to marry in states across the country. The ACLU has hired Steve Schmidt, Vice Chairman of Public Affairs at Endelman. Previously, Schmidt has worked on Capitol Hill as the Communications Director for the National Republican Congressional Committee.
United States Representative Gerald Nadler of New York and Senator Dianne Feinstein of California reintroduced the Respect for Marriage Act. The measure would repeal the entirety of DOMA and assure all married couples equal treatment for all federal programs and purposes. The bill was introduced in both houses with identical language intended to fully repeal DOMA.
Exodus International, a Christian ministry dealing with faith and homosexuality, announced it's closing its doors after 37 years. A new generation of Christians is looking for change and they want to be heard, said board member Tony Moore. The message came less than a day after Exodus released a statement apologizing to the gay community for years of judgment from the organization and the Christian church as a whole.
United States Reps Mark Pocan, the Democrat from Wisconsin, and Charlie Rangel, the Democrat from New York, proposed the Restore Honor to Service Members Act, which would ensure gay and lesbian service members who were discharged for their sexual orientation have their records upgraded to reflect their honorable service. The measure also removes any indication of a service member's sexual orientation from the record, so they are not automatically outed to those accessing their record, and protects against future discrimination. Since World War II, to the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in 2011, approximately 114,000 service members were discharged because of their sexual orientation.
Republican U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska has endorsed same-sex marriage and revealed that an Alaskan same-sex couple, a military family with four adopted children, factored into her decision. She called for the federal government to get out of the way of progress.
A recent article in the American Journal of Public Health analyzed national survey results and found that the LGBT adults smoke cigarettes at rates that are nearly 70% higher than the general population. A new study from Legacy shows that LGBT young adults ages 18 to 34 are also smoking at disproportionately high rates compared with their heterosexual counterparts.
The American Medical Association voted to oppose a ban by the U.S. FDA that prohibits gay men from donating blood. The FDA ban originated in 1983, in response to the AIDS outbreak, and some experts now say the policy is outdated. Approximately 1 in 2 million blood transfusions result in an HIV infection.
Transgender people in Delaware are now a protected class under the state's anti-discrimination laws. The Senate voted 11-9 to give final legislative approval to a measure adding gender identity to the list of protected non-discrimination categories, which include race, age, religion, and sexual orientation. The legislation also allows for enhanced penalties under Delaware's hate crimes law for targeting someone based on his or her gender identity.
In Louisiana, a historic event took place as each member of the New Orleans City Council backed a first-ever resolution providing local recognition for LGBT Pride Month.
The Colorado Civil Rights Division has ruled in favor of 6-year-old Coy Mathis, whose school had barred her from using the girls' bathroom at her elementary school because she is transgender. This was the first ruling in the nation holding that transgender students must be allowed to use bathrooms that match who they are. It is also the most comprehensive ruling ever supporting the rights of transgender people to access bathrooms without harassment or discrimination.
Air Force Undersecretary Eric Fanning became acting secretary of the branch and is now the highest ranking LGBT person in the Department of Defense. He's the civilian head of the Air Force. He had been deputy undersecretary and deputy chief management officer for the Navy since 2009.
In world news, Vietnam's National Assembly has agreed to begin debate on legalizing same-sex marriage this year. The LGBT movement in Vietnam blossomed on college campuses in recent years and has given rise to numerous advocacy organizations, including a support group similar to PFLAG. The nation's first LGBT pride parade last summer in Hanoi went off without an incident.
President Obama has picked openly gay John Barry as the U.S. ambassador to Australia. Barry served as the director of the Office of Personnel Management since 2009.
The Nepal Supreme Court has ordered the government to alter passports so that transgender people no longer have to describe themselves as male or female. The court made the decision following a petition from a trans individual who wanted a third category introduced on passports for people who identify as neither male or female.
The Council of Europe told Moroccan lawmakers to decriminalize a law banning and severely punishing gay sex. The Council's assembly expressed serious concern that the penal code criminalizes consensual sexual relations between persons of the same sex with penalties between 6 months and 3 years in prison.
Kevin Rudd has defeated Julia Gillard in a snap election to become a new party leader and Australia's prime minister. It comes just weeks after he announced his personal support for marriage equality in the country, saying he had previously been a dinosaur on the issue. Rudd, who was also prime minister from 2007 to 2010, is facing calls from LGBT rights advocates to make marriage equality a reality in the country/continent.
And also in Australia, Parliament passed legislation outlawing discrimination against gays and lesbians by faith-based aged care providers, despite coalition opposition on the grounds that the changes infringe upon religious freedom. Religious organizations enjoy an exemption from many areas of discrimination law, but the Labor Party wanted to remove this exemption in relation to aged care services.
In entertainment news, James Gandolfini, known primarily for his role as Tony Soprano on the TV show The Sopranos, died June 19th in Rome at the age of 51 of cardiac arrest. Gandolfini also played gay hitman Winston Baldry in the Julia Roberts Brad Pitt movie The Mexican.
The Disney Channel has announced that an episode of next season's children's series Good Luck Charlie will feature a family with two moms. It's the first for a show on the channel. Because Good Luck Charlie is coming to a close, the characters are only expected to appear in one episode.
A digital download release of the movie Stevie Nicks, In Your Dreams, is being issued on the heels of the film's recent successful theatrical run. Starting July 1st, fans can download a version at inyourdreamsmovie.com. The doc is an intimate portrait of Nicks, the Grammy-winning artist and member of iconic rock band Fleetwood Mac, as she creates an album with Dave Stewart of Eurythmics fame.
Nevada's Matthew Simmons, a former Marine, won the Mr. Gay World USA 2013 pageant. He'll represent the U.S. in the Mr. Gay World competition in Belgium August 5th.
Lesbian tennis legend Martina Navratilova says gay men still feel oppressed on the court and that many are still in the closet. She said she knew that there were professional male tennis players who were gay, but none would go public. Navratilova, now 56, came out of the closet in 1981.
Macklemore and Ryan Lewis's Same Love is reportedly the first same-sex anthem to be a Billboard Top 40 hit. While Lady Gaga's Born This Way, which debuted at number one on the Billboard Hot 100, affirmed acceptance for all, including the LGBT community, Same Love is the first Top 40 tune to embrace the concept of same-sex marriage.
And after 2 years as a runner-up, Forbes named Oprah Winfrey the most powerful celebrity, heading the six women and four men who make up the top 10. It was the fifth time the former talk show host, who runs her own TV network, has headed the annual ranking of 100 celebrities. Lady Gaga came in second, followed by director-producer Steven Spielberg and singers Beyoncé and Madonna. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, you're listening to Lucy Lawless on Windy City Queercast with my favorite gal, Amy.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of July 1st, 2013, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Don't miss The Liar, now playing at Writers Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from downtown Chicago on the Eden or the Metra. Misunderstandings, secret agendas, and witty wordplay abound in this delightfully ingenious and irreverent update of a classic French romp that just might be the theatrical highlight of the summer, and that's no lie. To purchase tickets to The Liar, visit writerstheater.org.
Idina Menzel is coming to Aurora's River Edge Park Outdoor Concert Pavilion, one night only, July 19th. The star of Broadway's Wicked and Rent, as well as the hit TV show Glee, Idina Menzel takes the stage with a 55-piece orchestra to perform her greatest hits. Limited tickets are available at riveredgeaurora.com. That's riveredgeaurora.com.
Lifeline Theater concludes its 30th anniversary season of Big Stories Up Close with The Three Musketeers, based on the legendary classic by Alexandre Dumas. For tickets and more to The Three Musketeers, visit lifelinetheater.com, running now through July 21st. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
a good life. It was a good, good life. Tomorrow we could all be gone. When the Russian gangsters sell the bomb and the waves come roaring from the sea, 100-foot swells over Venice Beach. Well, don't be scared and take my hand. We'll swim into the promise.
Singer-songwriter Jill Sobule and writer-actor Julia Sweeney are teaming up for the Jill and Julia Show. It's a delightful, funny, musical, and spoken word show that pairs Jill's songwriting, which is quirky and witty and personal, with Julia's funny monologues that are also equally personal. They explore topics of love, family, navigating middle of the life, little path there that some of us are on, and also living in our crazy, crazy modern world that is changing every day. I think that I first met Jill, gosh, maybe right before she released her CD, Pink Pearl, and many, many years ago, after five albums and a decade of recording, she continues to tackle topics that are perhaps seeming really rooted in activism and folk music, but she does it in a way that is so open that you feel like you're learning something and you're also seeing someone fully and authentically. And I love that about her. So I'm thrilled to have Jill on the Queercast. Hey, Jill, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Pride.
I know. It's semi-good times.
It's semi-good times, which can, like, really screw up a singer-songwriter and a comedian, right? I mean, it's do we write our best music and are we our funniest when things are good and looking positive?
Well, you can, but you have to admit, like, you know, writing a song that you know you're happy and love, it's like, people would rather hear the miserable, angry one sometimes. You know?
Yeah.
No, I have to say, and it's easier to do, because the last thing you want to do when you're kind of happy is sit down and write a song in a room. You'd rather be out in the park doing something, making out.
I'd always be rather making out than pretty much doing anything. So, yeah, right? I mean, come on, especially when it's Gay Pride Month and the Supreme Court's coming down on the right side and the Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. And, I mean, us in Chicago, you're about to walk into, like, the party of the world. It is there is a buzz in the city of Chicago these days. So we're excited that you're kicking off what is going to be a tour of this Jill and Julia Show here in Chicago on July 3rd, here in just a few days. The day before the 4th of July, and at the City Winery, which is a space I keep hearing about and I've not been to yet. So I have my tickets and I will be there and I hope others will too. Tell me, how did you and Julia meet? You seem kind of unlikely, but then you see you together and it makes perfect sense. So how did you two first meet?
I think it was about six or seven years ago, we were featured at a TED conference, you know, the TED Talk.
The TED, yeah.
TED. So we were at TED and we saw each other at one of the evening events, and we both came up to each other, and because I was a huge fan of hers, and she was a big, she knew all my songs. I was so taken aback and impressed. And then we found out that we lived a block away from each other. So,
in LA.
Within a month, we were hiking together. You know, I knew your family. And then I would have her come up, and there was a place called Largo, still is in Los Angeles, and I'd have her come up and say, why don't you just come up and sing? I don't know, tell a story. And she would tell a story, and then I would come up with a song that had something to do with that. And then little by little, we started doing it more. And we said, hey, let's take this somewhere else. But so it was really kind of this very organic, unplanned thing that we do. Mm-hmm. And it's still that way. It's still pretty spontaneous, and we kind of still don't really know what we're doing, which I think makes it better.
I think it keeps it on its toes, for sure. It's not, I mean, I've seen a Jill and Julia show, and we should say that it's kind of this living, breathing thing. It's not like you've written a script and you two play these characters that are Jill and Julia. It's really just you combining the best of what you do in conversation with the best of what she does, right?
Yeah, and the best part about it is, and what's great about us being on tour is I'll be in a car with her. And usually I'm really, you can't shut me up. But when I'm with Julia, sometimes you can't shut her up. And I'll just want to listen, and I'll just tell these stories that are so hysterical. And I'm you've got to tell this tonight. You've got to tell this tonight. Maybe I have a song for this. So it is that kind of living and breathing and spontaneous, and like our kind of song, the theme song is, you know, I sing, I tell stories, Jill and Julia show. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't, the Jill and Julia show.
Right.
But it's always got good intentions, you know. And
yeah.
She's so brilliant. She's so smart.
Well, and audiences, of course, loved her on Saturday Night Live for many years. I think her character of Pat is now a part of American, you know, culture. But she has been forging ahead, doing more. I mean, she kind of spends her time equally writing. Of course, she just launched a new book. But she's also done these one woman shows that she's gotten such acclaim for that have been made into films or television films with God Said Ha and Letting Go of God. But it's so different when you get to be in a dialogue with someone, you know, to have a conversation on stage. And I would imagine it's the same thing for a singer songwriter. You know, with you get behind your instrument and you play and you know, you're having a conversation with an audience, but how interesting to have that person on the stage with you. Does the conversation change nightly? Do you anticipate on the tour based on what's going on or how that car ride goes between Pittsburgh and DC?
Well, there's some things that we'll keep, you know. Mm-hmm. For instance, there was a song of mine, Train, and we were backstage. This was a few performances ago, and she started doing really hysterical, bad interpretive dancing just backstage for me of one of my songs. And I was like, you have to do that. You have to. You know? So I was like, you know, so every performance, I'm like, come on. Well, and the other thing you were saying is seemed unlikely, but not and that we're together. But in one way, there's a lot of similarities. There's, mm-hmm. We both had kind of, you know, our semi-iconic moments. You know, she had Pat and I had the first, not the Katy Perry bird, you know, the I Kissed a Girl.
Right.
Supermodel. And sometimes it put us in the box. So if people, you know, which is sometimes wonderful, but our cross to bear too. So we both have that is a similar wonderful problem to have is that, you know, do people just know us for this one kind of thing? You know?
Right. Right. How did you brought it up. I don't know if it's a touchy subject or not, but how did you feel when Katy Perry launched I Kissed a Girl? I mean, yours was so iconic for my generation, you know, even the MTV or VH1 generation of seeing that video at that time. It was just probably the advent of lesbian chic, of like the turn of the 90s, right? Wasn't it right around then?
Yeah, but you know what? It was actually first, but kind of was before the Ellen kiss, you know,
yeah.
The Ellen kiss.
Oh,
and,
for sure, for
and
sure.
It really
and it
was
not before the Katy Lang or Cindy Crawford shaving Katy Lang on Vanity Fair. Like we had just kind of started to become a little chic, right? And then you put out this song, which created something. And then it felt like all these years later, it seemed new again. You know, does a new generation need to hear that it's okay to kiss a girl?
Well, I think it was a different spirit, not taking away from that. But I think mine was really trying to write a song that I wish would have been written when I was a kid. And really with the humor underneath, I was hoping it was not just subversive, but empowering and mm. and a queer song in a way where I feel like maybe the and like I said, not taking away from a good pop song, but it was more of a cute kind of girls gone wild. Isn't this, you know, I kissed a girl, you know, and my boyfriend will think that's cute. And mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that there was a generation that was saying, hey, that felt good for me because I, mm-hmm. you know, I have that feeling. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that was maybe the main purpose of the song, you yeah. know, yeah. whether that matters or not, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it's a different time now, right, with young people where they don't want to be labeled. They don't want to feel like they could only make one choice. They don't, you know, I mean, maybe hers is a more of a generational song of the blurred aspect,
well,
you know, the gray area. I don't know.
Well, on one hand, but on the, you know, for on one hand, for a bubble of people, and it's going to be bigger for people that are in Chicago and New York and for people like where we are, but I think you still have those flyover seats are a lot of
yeah.
It's not quite as much that way.
Yeah.
As we would like to think.
Yeah.
Not yet. Getting there. I mean, it's pretty amazing this week how fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so stunning how fast. The DOMA's gone. It's amazing. It's wonderful.
Do you think any of that will make its way into your show? Is it hard to ignore something that politically big, being an artist like yourself?
Well, yeah, because it's such a, you know, I mean, Julie and I haven't talked about it because we haven't talked to each other since she's been in Ireland, but it's a big deal for me.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Well, I mean, because
I certainly have a lot of songs that talk about. I was big on the Christian right. I had a lot of songs about them.
Yeah. Yes.
I still am obsessed. I go on like rightwingwatch.com, which has like mm-hmm. the best of the crazies, you know, mm-hmm. the Fishers and the ones that are really, you know.
But it's really interesting. In our news story, just before your interview here, we just did a news story about Exodus International closing its doors and making an apology. Also this week, making an apology. And for those of you who don't know, Exodus International, if you missed just hearing the news a few minutes ago, you know, organization that did ex-gay therapy, ex-gay ministry, wanting to take away the gay, so to speak, for decades, right? I mean, I've been doing radio for a long time, and I've interviewed these people. So, you know, it's really, really interesting to hear a public apology and to say that they're closing their doors, that their quote was something that we see that Christians now want to change. And they apologized for their attitude toward the homosexual community. I mean, you kind of feel like, has hell frozen over?
I mean, well, I know. I'm kind of upset about that because they were so fun to make fun of.
Oh, there's still people to make fun of. You're
oh, yeah, but
shortage.
I love the Polks. Wasn't that the Polks? John Polk and his wife mm-hmm. were the started Exodus. They were so great. But, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, there's plenty more people.
Mm-hmm.
But, damn.
So tell me, what are some of the stories? You said you know there are some things that will kind of create the core structure of the show. What are the things that you and Julia feel like in your lives right now are really in sync? Julia's always talked so much about family. I mean, you know, her not only with her mother and her brother and some of her work, but now with her, you know, her immediate family, husband and child. What are the topics that you know are kind of threading through your tour?
Well, I think last time it's also we find ourselves we're not young chickens anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that dealing with, you know, she's a family. We deal with a little bit of age, our careers, and we deal with love. Mm-hmm. So we kind of dig on every, you know, all aspects of our lives, from our work to when we get home.
Yeah.
And what's on our mind.
And what's on your, whatever goes through and filters through the mind, out the mouth. That's what I love. I mean, really, anything can happen at a Jill and Julia show. And what I love is it's kind of, there's an affirmation that whatever happens is supposed to happen. And if it's not great, we went there anyhow. And usually it's pretty great because I've experienced
usually,
it.
Usually, once in a while, there'll be like a story where I was, there was some story, I don't remember what it was. All I remember, it has something to do with masturbation. And I said, she told me this hysterical story, and I said, you've got to tell this. And it went over like a lead balloon, you know. And she's like, why did you make me tell that story?
Oh, my God.
I thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny. Well, you've been kind of honing this show, for those of us here in Chicago, up at a place called Space in Evanston. Kind of in the heart of Evanston. You've been doing this show often around New Year's, or it's kind of been this underground thing, like, hey, did you hear the Jill and Julia show are doing a night? And it sells out really, really quickly. But now you're taking it on the road. I hear that you're going to be filming this. What's the intent of filming as you go on tour?
Well, we actually did film our last time at Space, and, you know, to put out a little Jill and Julia movie for whatever reason online, and you know, charge like a dollar to watch it. Who knows? I don't know what we're deciding on what to do with it. But basically, you know, it feels like a shame to not document, you know, especially stories. There's some stories that Julia's told that I love so much, and she's so sick of telling that. You know, it's easier to repeat songs. You can repeat songs all the time. But stories, you know, she feels like, I'm never sick of my songs.
Yeah.
I'm having a good time with them. You know, but a story is a different thing. So.
Well, and she's been on a book tour. She's got a new book that came out this spring called If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother, which sounds hysterical. I've not had a chance to read it yet. But, and you know, she's kind of, she's a Chicago gal. She lives in the suburbs. You're in LA still, right?
Yeah, although I'm on the road so much of the time.
Yeah.
I'm back. I was on tour for a month and just got back a couple days ago, and I go back Monday to go with Julia. So.
Yeah. So how has touring been for you, and what's new on your horizon? Besides the Jill and Julia show that you want folks to know about, are you always writing? Do you write all the time? And do you write a lot when you're touring?
Oh, I don't write when I'm on touring. That's the problem. I never understood you hear how, like, Duke Ellington to the Beatles, you know, they constantly wrote while they were performing. And I think, I don't know really many people, performers, who do that. And I think it's just such a different mindset to be performing and then traveling all day. And I also think now it's hard because you come back to your hotel room and you're like, do I want to write or do I want to watch HBO?
Yeah.
You know, and I always go for HBO or on demand. So I usually have to take time off to say, this is time I'm not going to write. And I think that's not unusual. But I've been working on two musicals, actually. One that we did a reading in New York for the Public Theater, and one that was an adaptation of, do you remember a movie called Times Square? It came out in 1980 about two girls. It was kind of like a bad, good bad cult movie, but we're doing something on that. And then I'm doing music for not the Barbra Streisand version of Yentl. It was Isaac Bashevis singer, a short story, and a Broadway play in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So they've wanted to add some music, so I've been working on that. So that's, and then I was just on tour with a friend of mine who has a band and was actually in a band called Jefferson Airplane and the Hot Tuna. And so I was on tour with them, and it was pretty fantastic and amazing. I mean, the crowd was like, you know, people who were there, you know, they were at Woodstock, and they survived to like young Stone jam band kids, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Good audience. So that's what I was playing for in the last month.
I'm
and
curious.
You know what I learned?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I learned
tell me.
That I would rather play for stoners than drunk.
Ooh, well, who wouldn't? I'd kind of rather be around stoners than drunks all time.
They're more pleasant.
Yeah. Well, it can just kind of turn on a dime with drunks, but you know, it kind of just stays steady with stoners and eases on out. So that's what's better for me.
Yeah, they're just kind of easy. You know, yeah. They come up to me, it's like, I really like your music. Yeah, it's nice.
So now these two Broadway shows with Squared and Yentl.
Well, they haven't gone to Broadway yet. They're still in development. So.
Right. But dipping your toe into this world of Broadway musicals,
yeah.
Were you glued to Cindy's Win with Kinky Boots? And is it inspiring to see, you know, artists
awesome
who have
to
had
see
their...
her do it.
Oh, amazing, right?
Yeah. It's you know, first of all, I love her so much. And second of all, it's great to see a non-traditional musician and artist. And I think that's, digging this, you know, putting our toes in that water.
Mm-hmm.
Really refreshing. And plus, she, like I said, she's the best.
Well, we will maybe see you there one day on the Tony Awards. And then, you know.
I'm already working on my outfit.
There you go. I'm excited. I'll be there. I will be the first to buy a ticket to that. But right now I already have my tickets, so get your tickets. And if you're listening and you're not in Chicago, do not fear, because as I said, they're going on tour. But the tour launches. The kickoff is here. I kind of like to think that this is your second home, Jill, because I only see you here, and I see you here so often.
I love Chicago. I could live there.
We've adopted you. We really have. And now that Julia's here, it's like you're in deep. But they are going to be at City Winery, the Jill and Julia show here in Chicago, launching off their 2013 summer tour on Wednesday, July 3rd. If you'd like tickets, you go to citywinery.com. We'll have that linked in the show notes. And then the tour immediately is kicking off, and they are going to be all over the place. So there are stops in Pittsburgh and Massachusetts and Connecticut and is it Massachusetts or Maine? New York City, Ann Arbor, Michigan. And you can find out about the tour, I'm assuming, on Jill's website, jillsobule.com, which we'll have in the show notes as well. Or Google
hey,
that.
Where's Oak Park? Where's Oak Park? Is that near you?
Oak Park is in Illinois. It's a suburb of Chicago, and it is where Frank Lloyd Wright grew up. It's a very queer, cool community of beautiful bungalow homes and all of
the
that.
The day before, the first.
Monday?
The first? No, it's...
Tuesday the 2nd?
Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the 1st? I'm trying to think. It's Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Tuesday's the 2nd.
There's a house concert I'm doing, and they just told me that they have a few seats open. It's a private house concert, and if I wanted to invite anyone, and I don't know that many people there, so if you have a few people that want to go to this Oak Park thing, it's just going to be really intimate, just me with a guitar. They should email you, or who should they email? Or they could do jill@jillsobule.com.
There you go. Go to jill@jillsobule.com if you can go to the house concert in Oak Park. I definitely know we probably have listeners in the western suburbs and near Oak Park that might like to do a private concert like that. How awesome is that? So jill@jillsobule.com. We'll put that in our show notes, too.
That's 10 tickets.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. There'll be a few days here for people to hopefully get tickets to that, and also to get tickets for City Winery, because that is going to be an amazing way to send you guys off on this first Jill and Julia tour, the first of many.
Yay!
But look for them coming to a city near you. And Jill, break legs. I will see you on the 3rd, and give Julia my best, and happy, happy Pride, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Happy Pride. And if people go on my site at jillsobule.com, they can see who I'm getting engaged to. It's Gay Pride Cat. my neighbor's cat, but you have to take a picture. You have to see the picture of it. It's hysterical.
All right. Go to Jill's site. Go to Jill's site.
It's a slippery slope, you know, once they give the gaze.
Yep. You're always going to be stirring it up, aren't you, Jill? That's what I love about you.
Stirring it up. Now it's feline.
It's just you're so cute and sweet and seem like, you know, the girl next door that you're able to stir it up so ferociously and deeply, which I love.
There you go.
Jill Sobule, it's the Jill and Julia Show kicking off July 3rd at City Winery. Don't miss it. And everybody, I hope you have a wonderful Pride weekend. Have fun at the parade. I predict a million people strong. I predict our parade will be so much bigger than the Stanley Cup parade on Friday. And I hope everybody has a safe and fun holiday. And then, you know what? Next week has another holiday. We love it. It's really the gay high holidays right now. I'll talk to you next week, everyone. Happy Pride. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now. Would you stay?